Thank you.
Thank you. No, no, thank you. This is Katy Perry on Radio 3 and Watch It Burn. Let's say hi to Maurice Mislowski, live from St. Kilda Central. How are you?
I am very, very good, thank you. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Happy Tuesday. Good to be back with you, Maurice. As you know, he's our in-house very tame biz futurist. He's picked up a cool article today, and it's all about the fact that in 1976, the Washington Post decided to speculate on what life would be like today. Maurice, before you take it away, it was a bit Jetsons, yeah, wasn't it, what they said?
Yeah, it was. It was. I mean, everybody predicts, and it's the same today. Everybody talks about flying cars and all these things that are going to happen, robots. They all go to machines. They all go to hardware. Most of us, when we think about the future, think about hardware. You know, where we'll be living, how we'll be driving, you know, the robots are going to be living with us, all that kind of stuff. But really the big revolution is, for me anyway, over the last 50 years, yeah, we've seen a lot of hardware, but it's mostly the software has changed.
Did any of these people way back then even hint at the possibility of something resembling AI?
No.
I didn't think so.
No. Remember that 76, I mean, it seems so recent for many of us, or maybe it's just me again, 76 doesn't seem that far away. 50 years ago, AI was known, but only known to the researchers and the university boffins and others, and it was never going to come to a world that you and I would ever live in. But, of course, it has. It was also pre-PC. Of course, they existed, but they were very, very high-end, mostly IBM, mostly, you know, mainframes. That was the days when literally a computer took up an entire room, a huge room, and it was air-conditioned and the floor was leveled out, so that, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was an enormous expense, and most computers in those days were only owned by governments or very, very, very large companies.
It's interesting, isn't it, how some of these germs of the cool things today, you say, well, they never thought it would amount to, didn't anybody ever think this would amount to anything?
Well, don't know. I'm sure somebody did, but in this article, and again, the article was, as you said, the New York Times, they were talking to their everyday readers, and the survey went out, telling me what you think is going to happen in 50 years. And
Washington Post, but all the same.
Washington Post, Washington Post. At least one of us is paying attention.
Yeah, not really, not very much, though. It's really interesting, though. It's almost like these guys were brilliant scientists, and yet you never get the impression they thought so-and-so would be an everyday thing. Like, it's all military use and big time and secret. But nobody ever thought, you know, well, we'd have it on our whatever we had in our pockets in these days.
And it makes sense, again, if we paint the picture, in 76 it was all governments. Really, you and I, the average individual, had very little access to technology. We were talking literally the days when the good old calculator came out. I mean, literally, the calculator.
If you had one of those so-called scientific ones, you thought you were like Joe 90, didn't you?
It was even bigger than that. I've told you the story before how I was told off in year 10, whatever that is, the equivalent of a couple of years before you finish, by my maths teacher for using a calculator in the classroom. And for the first time ever, because I was a nerd, the first time ever I was actually almost thrown out of the classroom for using one of these god, you know, terrible devil devices.
Yeah. Let's get to this article for a second, Maurice. There's one thing, I'll let you go down it, but there's one thing in there that's almost on the money, and they talk about work life, and they reckon a drastic reduction in working hours due to automation. Well, that's kind of where we've come. You tell us the rest.
I would argue, in fact, we're working more now than we ever have before. And statistically, by minutes, we actually are. And the reason for that is, you're right, that the actual days seem different, but most people are on 24/7, even if they don't claim to be. If you add up that moment, what happened again, if we paint a picture of 76, basically for many of us, when you left work at 5 or 8 or 10 or whatever the time was, you know, whatever your shift was over, that was it. I mean, your life was yours. You went away. Nobody annoyed you. The boss couldn't ring you. You had one landline that you shared with the rest of the family or who knows whoever else, and that was it. So you were left to your own devices. But when you came in, you kind of handed in your soul, and when you left, you got it back again. And that's why I argue, in fact, workers takes up more time now, because we're always thinking about it.
I suppose so.
But you're right. In work life in 76, they said that they thought we were going to work drastically few hours. It's a great thing of, you know, 2-3 days a week and the rest of it sitting on some island sipping martinis. Oh. And when we talk about 2026 today, we take for granted hybrid remote work. Phenomenal. To be able to work from home in 76 was really unthinkable.
You had to be off sick, probably.
Pretty much, and you weren't working from home, I mean, obviously, so that was difficult. I mean, there was only a telephone. I know I keep saying it, but it's such a different world. You know, in 76 in Australia, I can't speak for Hong Kong, but in Australia in 76, a female couldn't take out a bank loan by herself.
Goodness me.
she had to have a guarantor from a male, and that was the banking system. If a female, God forbid, got pregnant in the early 70s, late 60s, of course, but in the early 70s, she had to resign if she worked in public service. She was not able to continue to work.
Was Australia late to the party on that compared to other places?
Yeah, pretty much. We were very, very conservative in the 70s, 60s, 70s. We got our first credit card, our first mass credit card in 74.
Why do you think that was?
Australia, in its day, was a very, very conservative backwater. Our banking system was owned by three banks at that stage, maybe four, but I'd argue three banks, and they pretty much said what happened. The government ran the roost, literally, and we were very compliant as a nation. It was a great time too, don't forget. Baby boomers were coming into their stride then. You know, the baby boomers like me, they're all, you know, the reason for everything being terrible now. But we were having a good heyday in those days. We were starting our career. We were getting to buy and spend and do. It was a post-war era. I know it was long after the war, but at this stage in the 60s and 70s, Australia had really put the war behind us, and we had already built houses. People were starting to have really good incomes, really good job opportunities. It was a very different world. But yes, we were very conservative.
So if you just joined us, Morris is taking you back to the year 1976 when the Washington Post decided to predict what it would be like this year. So fly down the list. Well, apparently we'd be on Mars. It's all. Tell us the rest, Gordon.
Yeah. So transportation, 76, they expected flying cars and nuclear-powered transit. Could you imagine having that discussion today?
Yep.
Not the flying cars. We're still having it today. And there are some maybe on our horizon, but nuclear-powered.
Morris, why flying cars? Why was that always a fascination?
Oh, it comes from science fiction, 100% pure science fiction. It was written in our novels. And by that stage in 76, most of us had seen lots of movies with flying cars.
Yeah,
the Jetsons,
right.
The Jetsons were big in the 60s, that cartoon I keep referring to. We need to remember, for me especially, that when we talk about cartoons and movies, there wasn't anything else for us to do. We didn't have Netflix or anything else. We watched mass media, and we watched it religiously because that's all there was. So for people that were in that vintage, they literally soaked in it, and that's what their memories and their thoughts were made of.
All right, then. What else have we got?
So space exploration, we'd been to the moon, but in 76 we expected permanent Mars colonies.
Why?
And, of course, our friend Musk and others are talking about that now, but they expected that. Today we're beginning. We have commercial low Earth orbit. If you're really, really rich, you can spend $500,000 or more and go up not that far and come back down quite quickly. And we're just starting to talk about robotic Mars now. It'll be interesting in 50 years, which we'll come to in a moment, I assume. Communication in 76, you know, we expected high-fidelity video telephony in every home.
And now we want to get away from
it. Isn't that a mouthful? That's how we understood it. Video telephony is what it was called. And today you and I pick up some app or whatever it is, and we just look at it.
I like the way it says every home.
Yeah, every home.
The mobile issue was not, it just wasn't part of it.
Yeah, but it was thinking that these devices would be big. They were not you and I in our pocket or in our handbags.
Sure.
They were a big beast that sat on a bench somewhere. And again, the whole family kind of sat around. We know what today is. Computing in 76, they expected massive central mainframes, which is what I said before. Then that's why I framed it that way, that in 76 it was so expensive and so impossible that only big companies and governments would ever have it. And today you and I, of course, don't even think about having a PC in many cases. We've got a tablet or a phone or something else, and that suffices for most of us.
Yeah, there's an interesting conundrum in this one, Morris. So I'm just going to read a bit here. It says, the 1970s viewed connectivity as a matter of distance, bringing the world closer. In 26, connectivity is an issue of attention. The existence of social media has created a paradox where individuals are globally connected but often socially isolated. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, we're too well connected, and some people would argue. And that doesn't mean that, you know, the access that it gives us to the world isn't a good thing, but it's the overloading for many people, the constantly on, the ability to find somebody anywhere, anytime, and really never to be able to retreat. It's the same we spoke a moment ago about the work, being able to switch off, so to speak, when we left. It's difficult for many people now to switch off because these devices that we've chosen to have with us and not to put away in the cupboard, they don't allow us to switch off very easily.
There's another – I want to get onto an article you wrote. So quickly on this one, there's another thing, unforeseen variables. And, of course, global pandemics, the systematic shock of global health crises, which they didn't bank on. So that's changed things, isn't it?
It has, absolutely. Could you imagine, and I wish it had never come true in the first place, but could you imagine COVID in the 40s, 50s and 60s? COVID was the equivalent of the Black Plague.
Oh, yeah.
And that took decades. I mean, it literally took decades and almost a century, and was very lumpy and bumpy. I mean, that some people by that had readier access to ways to overcome it than other people. And that's really what they're talking about there, this inability for everybody to have ready access to whatever it was.
So how much did the Washington Post hit home in 1976, do you think?
Not much.
Yeah, fair play.
Not much. I mean, it took all the science fiction stuff that most people dream of, some of which we have, some of which we don't. As I said, all hardware driven. The world really has changed tremendously in 50 years, but not because of this hardware, because of the software, because of the connectivity, because of AI, because of the internet, all the other things that most of us take for granted already within that really short period of 50 years.
Well, it's always fun to chat about it, isn't it? MorrisFuturist.com, yeah. If you want to find out about our next topic. I love this. So the foresight behind classic Australian phrases like, yeah, nah. And I've got a theory about that one, which I'll say really quickly because I'm a polymer and I haven't got a clue. It's saying, I am affirming that I'm definitely going to say no to what I'm about to say to you now. I'm saying, yeah, nah, meaning this is a big nah, and I'm affirming that I'm saying it. How's that?
It's almost, you know, it really is in the intonation. It's the way that you say it.
Go on.
So it depends whether you emphasize the yeah or the nah. And it's an Australian thing. You can tell if somebody means no, which is what you've just said, and it's absolutely correct. But if somebody says, yeah, nah, you really know that the answer's no.
You're agreeing with them and saying no.
Yeah, but... And if you just say, yeah, nah, I mean, you do it quickly, then you're doing the opposite.
Is it contextual? You know, when people say, when people say like a lot, when you hear teenagers and all sorts of people saying like this, like that, like tends to mean I'm taking you to the place. I was like, I'm that, you're there now. It's a cutaway.
It is. And it's amazing how this year now is part of the Australian vernacular. If you meet an Aussie anywhere, if you use that phrase, they will think that you are from Australia. I mean, in our family, we have a joke, which I started because we use this. Well, other
you
people in the family use this phrase a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't actually. I thought I was a joke. But I actually refer to this as the nah, yeah, in our family, because we seem to start from the negative and move over to the positive. But it talks about the reality that our words, and you and I have spoken about this over the years, that our words really do shine a light on the way that culture is changing. Dictionaries don't predict. It's not as if they're putting the words in hoping that they'll become popular. They really have to trace its history back going years or by volume. So they're saying these words are popular. They're part of everyday culture, part of everyday language.
Take us through your article a little bit, Morris. There's tons of fun stuff in here.
Yeah, there is. So if you read at the top, which we shan't, I've written a paragraph, two paragraphs, which uses all of the words. I love some of these words. I didn't even know many of these words. So there are words like whackers. No whackers.
No whackers. No worries.
Yeah, absolutely. No whackers. And the other one, I mean, again, there are 12 words that have gone into this dictionary. Another set of words is donkey vote, which is a really popular phrase in Australia. Donkey vote means that when you've gone to vote, which in Australia is compulsory.
Yes.
If you don't vote, you get fined.
Yep.
So in Australia, a donkey vote means, look, I'm going under protest, and donkey vote usually means 1, 2, 3. So when the candidates are listed, I'm not even looking at the names. I'm just putting numbers in because I want to get this over and done.
So that's a reaction.
Yeah, it is. It's a civic word. It means I am being forced to comply and I have no interest in doing this, so I'm not going to do it.
So it's a protest, actually.
Absolutely. Donkey vote is seen as a protest. That's a great word for it, yeah. Now, the other one, another one, which is part of the Australian vernacular, has been for 30 years. I don't know why it took so long for it to come in, is a cup of tea and a Bex and a good lie down.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that ever went anywhere else in the world, but it was. Me too. I hope not, because we were plagued by it. A Bex, B-E-X, is an aspirin.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's a tablet that you take when you have a headache.
Oh.
And it was big in the 50s and 60s, and the ad campaign was exactly that. They ran a series of ad campaigns on television, radio, and in the media. Everybody that grew up in that vintage knew it. It was the default saying. In fact, people just assumed it was what you said.
Was it a brand?
Bex was a brand, absolutely, like Aspro or Aspirin.
Gotcha.
So what you said was in the ad was, if somebody said I wasn't feeling well, then this old woman, who was a grandmother figure in this ad, would say, add a cup of tea, a Bex, and a good lie down, and you'll be right.
That was brilliant advertising then. There are a handful of commercials where people always remember the,
And it came down to vernacular, and it's still said today. Even kids today that don't know where it came from, they've been brought up with it. Granny or somebody will always tell you when you're complaining, you know, just have a cup of tea at Beck's and a lie down, you'll be fine.
Maurice, we're out of time, but tell our listeners where they can find you, because there's tons of fun stuff in this article.
So it's morrisfuturist.com. We'll take you straight to the blog.
Lovely. We'll chat next week. Really good stuff. Always having fun chatting with Maurice.